This is Derek Bros. This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance. I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries: Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much. So many loved ones gone.
Don't you fucking tease that horse!
You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Above all, stay alive. You have no idea how important.
All right, everyone, welcome to the Conscious Resistance Network. My name is Derek Bros. Today is Monday, January 4th, 2021. It's a brand new year, and we're going to start things off right this year by exposing people that need to be exposed, exposing criminals. And I have a very, very important, interesting guest to bring you guys today, and I hope you'll stay with me for the next hour or so. We're going to be talking about some topics that are familiar to my audience, but also in a way that perhaps is not familiar. So before I go any further, I want to remind everybody who's new, who's tuned in, we are live right now across several Facebook pages. We are live on DLive, we are live on Float, and of course this will be recorded and posted on all my channels across my networks. And if you want to follow our work, you can go to theconsciousresistance.com to get plugged in. So what I want to say before I bring on my guest is, if you haven't followed my work prior to this or over the last couple of years, I want to invite you to visit our documentaries page, because I've done a couple of documentaries dealing with the topic of today, particularly criminal pedophile networks infiltrating, specifically in America, infiltrating Hollywood, infiltrating politics, infiltrating the media. I did this documentary a couple of years ago, Bringing Down Jeffrey Epstein, that many of you have seen, and had about 600,000 views before YouTube took it down, exposing Epstein and his connection to intelligence agencies in America, in the UK, Israel, as well as his connection to lots of high-profile people. And then I also did this one, which I think is probably relevant to our conversation today in some ways, and it's called Who Will Find What the Finders Hide? It's a documentary related to networks of individuals who traffic children, child trafficking, human trafficking, involving sexual abuse, accusations of ritual sexual abuse, and again, connections to intelligence agencies in the U.S. government and potentially in other governments as well. And this happened in the 1980s in the United States. And I was able to fully uncover evidence that proves this is 100% fact, no conspiracies about it. If you've not seen these documentaries, I invite you to go check them out at theconsciousresistance.com. The difference between those stories and what we're going to be covering today is that we're going to broaden our scope. We're going to start looking a little bit more internationally. So I'm going to bring on now my guest, Sheena, and she is going to tell us a little bit about who she is, Sheena Lakhani, who will tell us about her journey, what she's been involved with, what she's witnessed, and more importantly, what some in the Indian media, the Indian government, and I'm sure even outside of India are trying to cover up and now attacking her, going after her character, and even, I would say, putting her life in danger. So Sheena, welcome to the broadcast. How are you doing?
Thank you, Derek, for having me on here.
You're staying up late for us too. I want to say that to let everybody know, like it's past your midnight already and you're staying up to do this. So I really appreciate you doing that. I hope everybody will again give you the time and attention that you deserve. So let's just go ahead and get right into it. I don't want to waste any of your time or my time. Let's let everybody know a little bit about who you are, your background, before we get into the topic at hand.
So my name is Sheena Lakhani. I was born in Ontario, Ottawa, which is the national capital of Canada. And when I was 4, I moved to the US, to South Carolina. And I lived in South Carolina and North Carolina for 15 to 16 years. I studied at University of North Carolina. I studied at some of the finest schools on the East Coast. And from a young age, aside from my studies, I was, in Spanish theater, and I was a ballerina. I did ballet, tap, jazz, gymnastics for more than 8 years. I've played sports. I've performed. I used to teach salsa when I was living in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Raleigh, North Carolina. And I am a bachata dancer as well. So I've competed even, you know, in Toronto and international level kind of competitions. And I've also done theater in Europe, in Romanian language. But my study background is mostly business-based. So I did a triple major at University of North Carolina in finance, accounting, and international business. And my minor was Spanish and Spanish translation and business Spanish. And then I went to University of Toronto, where I transferred in May 2006. I transferred to University of Toronto. And I was doing financial economics and sociology there with Spanish again. And before I completed my final year, basically, of university, I started my own consulting firm in investor relations, public relations. And I was working on Bay Street, which is the Wall Street of Canada. And I'm the president and CEO of a Canadian consulting firm. So I was working mainly with Canadian mining companies that have projects all over the world, like Ecuador, Peru, Namibia, Botswana, Turkey, Northern Ontario and Quebec. And I was doing all the translation work, and a lot of my clients were from political, you know, backgrounds, or high net worth individuals, or very influential people. So I was privy to a lot of, you know, classified information, or, you know, sometimes I would get news before Reuters and Bloomberg, and, you know, because I have contacts on ground in the countries, and I would get information. So basically, you know, it worked out really well. My career took off from a very young age. And then I felt like, you know, my office was on the top floor of the Toronto Stock Exchange Tower. And I said, you know, I climbed up, you know, the corporate ladder very quickly with my own company right from university itself. But I felt like a part of my soul, you know, was missing, like it was lost. So in February 2010, I had a big transformation in my life when I started mystical yoga, and I started meditating under the guidance of an enlightened guru. And I got back into the arts, like, you know, very, very much so. I was dancing, and I was planning on opening up my own dance studio in Yorkville, which is like, you know, the very prime posh area of downtown Toronto. And then things kind of changed, and I started having visions of Bombay, and I didn't know anything about India. And I somehow got connected to a dancer named Dharmesh Yeland, which a lot of people in Bollywood know from the show Dance India Dance, which is a dance reality show. So we were on video call on Skype, and he said, well, you know, why don't you come to India and, you know, try things out in Bollywood? And I kept having visions, you know, so I was like, okay, let's see what could happen. And I was doing a lot of traveling. I had gone to Venezuela, and I had gone all over Europe, Paris. And I also, from the beginning of February 2010, I also started training in holistic therapies. And today I have more than 60 diplomas in various holistic therapies, in Reiki, bioenergy, Qigong, Dowsing, Jinlap Maitri, Lama Fera, multidimensional Shambhala, Iron Shirt Qigong. I'm also training under my guru in martial arts, in Tai Chi, Qigong, Badwan Jing, Yin Jing Jing. So, you know, I've been, you know, a constant student. And when people meet me, they say, you know, people who know me, they're like, Sheena, we don't know how you are so involved and so knowledgeable about so many different topics in depth. And when somebody new interviews me, you know, everything seems very unbelievable. So, you know, I'm really thankful today that Derek is giving me this opportunity to share my story. And you know, I've given you access to all the documents and evidence, photographs, videos, recordings.
Let's start right there. So thank you again for being with us, Sheena, and for providing that background. I think that's important for people to get that, to hear the background on who you are, so that those who tune in have an understanding of where you're coming from, that, you know, you're not just a random person making accusations or, you know, as you have shared with me and we're going to share today, you do have a lot of accusations of people already attacking you for choosing to speak up. So let's move. As you said, you end up connecting and coming to India, and that's where things maybe, I guess the story begins. Do you want to start off with that part, and I guess how that leads to everything else we're dealing with today?
Yeah, so I first came to India like in 2007, just a very short family trip. It was our first visit to India. I was here for 3.5 weeks and that was it. And then I came in 2011. I left Toronto on the 7th of Feb and I arrived in Bombay on the 9th of Feb. And I was living with Dharmesh Yaland in Lokhandwala, second cross lane. And he had this one bedroom flat and, you know, a very big heart and a small little home. And, you know, he was very kind and very hospitable. So I came to India and I didn't know the language or anything. And a cousin of mine from Kinshasa, Congo, he had brought Akon to India to produce a song. A music video with Adish Srivastav. So he's a very famous music composer. He passed away in 2015, but his family is very close to my family. And so I started, like, you know, meeting people because of my cousin. And my cousin had won an award for a reality show, best reality show in Africa, which was kind of like The Voice, and Akon was the judge there. So, you know, he was kind of guiding me, you know, like, if you want, you should first brand yourself if you want to teach Reiki or teach yoga. And then, you know, once people get to know you, then, you know, you can try and teach things, because people here don't, you know, accept things so easily. So Adish Srivastav sent me to meet, he gave me two names, two numbers, and he said, you know, why don't you go and get a portfolio shoot done either by Dabu Ratnani or Subi Samuel. So I did my first photo shoot with, you know, one of the top two Bollywood celebrity photographers. So we went to Goa for 2 days and it was a big affair and I spent a lot of money and I got ripped off and I had no idea about things. But that happened, and then they were like, you know, you need to learn the language. How are you going to communicate with people? So I ended up looking for, you know, a tutor, and then I ended up in acting school because I found a really good tutor at Roshan Taneja School of Acting. So I enrolled in a 4-week weekend course, and then I was like, no, I need more time with this because it's a very difficult language. And then I you know, decided, okay, I'm going to stay for like a 4-month course. But before finishing, like, there was a month and a half left. I had to go back to Europe to my guru. So I had to first go to Toronto, and Adish Srivastav's brother-in-law, whose name is Lalit Pandit, people know him for a song called Muni Badnam Hui. So he had come to Toronto as well, and I picked him up in my, you know, because I was still running my company, and I picked him up in my convertible Mercedes, you know, 2-seater convertible, and we went to Ifa Rocks, and we went on the green carpet together, and we sat together, and I was sitting, you know, with, you know, all the other celebrities from Bollywood that were there. Zayed Khan was to my left, and Boman Irani was to my right, and Malaika Arora was sitting in front of me. And I was just observing, like, you know, for me, they're just normal people. And, you know, I didn't get starstruck or anything. I was just like, oh, they're just, you know, artists doing their job, like, just like I am. And people know me, you know, in Toronto, that I dance with Oscar Naranjo, if you know. He's an Ecuadorian dancer. Bachata dancer, international salsa champion. So I danced for him, with him for several, you know, for a few years in Toronto while I was there. And yeah, and then basically, you know, I left India after 5 months. And I wasn't sure if I was going to return. And then I did. Eventually, I came back in 2014. And I, you know, I made a decision that I'm going to move to India. And I'm going to focus on arts and dancing and acting. And on the side, I would do Reiki treatments and stuff. So I came in 2014. And that is when, you know, my eyes started opening very quickly. And I started getting approached, you know, in the first 6 to 8 months, I met so many people in the industry. And I mean, I was warned by my family what I would come across, but I didn't know that it would just be more than people trying, you know, to ask for sexual favors. It was more of, you know, I started to see that, you know, people were involved in drugs, you know, really serious drugs. And I've never smoked a cigarette in my life. And, you know, I'm being trolled right now that, you know, I'm a questionable person just because I'm speaking up and I'm exposing Bollywood. But this is the truth. And I think that it was, you know, this was really important to bring this up here. So, you know, the first time I heard about this, I didn't know what the code word meant. But I was approached by who ended up being my landlord, but I was approached by one of the biggest media company, which has like all these hoardings and stuff all over, like billboards, massive billboards all over the city. And in every Bollywood film, you see them as a sponsor. And in the film, throughout the film, you'll see billboards in the backgrounds and, you know, the backdrop of their hoardings or billboards, which they call it in America. So, you know, this guy called me to his, you know, he was sending me VIP passes, you know, to award ceremonies and stuff, and to these, you know, Zee Cine Awards and whatnot. And I went to a few of them, and then he calls me to his office, and he just tells me, like, oh, Sheena, you know, do you like going VIP and everything to all these things? And I said, it doesn't really matter to me because for some reason I'm very lucky. I'm always treated as a VIP wherever I go. So, and I also come from, like, you know, my ancestral roots are Persian from, you know, what is present day Iran. So we were part of a ruling royal family. So I'm kind of used to all of that. And I have a lot of friends from royal families and a lot of connects, you know, everywhere in different countries. So I was like, it doesn't really matter to me. So he says, well, if you want to work in the industry, you have to come pro. You know, you can be my friend, you can be my special friend, you can be my very good friend. And I couldn't understand what this word come pro meant. But come pro is a, you know, a phrase that's used for you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. It means that you sleep with me and I will give you work and I'll get you work and I'll give you a good name and I'll introduce you to, you know, producers and directors, you know, if you want to work in the industry. So, you know, the meeting ended on the note that if I want to work in the industry, I would have to sacrifice. And I said, look, I come from a very educated family and, you know, I've worked hard to achieve what all I've achieved in my life. And, you know, I don't need to do this kind of stuff. So I rejected it. And basically, it started from there because the industry is very
small. What point was that? Sorry to cut you off. What like point in the timeline or what year was that this started to, these offers started to happen?
So, yeah, I moved to India on the 30th of July, 2014. I moved here permanently. Like I shifted residency here kind of thing. And I was like, okay, I'll stay here for 6 months or 5 months, and then I'll travel back to Canada and to Europe. And, you know, so 2014, it started, the second half of 2014. I had come in October 2012. That's also another story, but that's kind of irrelevant to the topic today. And I had come in January 2013. So I'll mention that later when it comes up and it's relevant. But yeah, so this was 2014, you know, the second half of 2014. And, you know, I came back and I decided, okay, I'm going to finish my my acting diploma. It was a 4-month diploma course. So they welcomed me back and they said, you have another month and a half to finish. So we welcome you to come and complete. And we're looking forward to seeing you. And Roshan Taneja was still alive at that time. And he welcomed me back. And a lot of the big Bollywood, you know, icons of Bollywood history have, you know, been to his acting school, or, you know, it's a very, very small community. So everyone knows each other. So this happened around, I think it was around September, October 2014. And I was very shocked, but, you know, my family had prepared me, you know, I got all the prep in the UK before I came here. So that, you know, I was expecting, but I didn't know the keywords, you know, I didn't know the code words they use. And I started noticing things like, if I was invited to house parties and stuff, like, you know, I'll have a glass of wine and I'll be milking that one glass of wine, but people just all of a sudden get drunk and become hysterical. And I remember one party at Mahalakshmi, at a, you know, a very posh building there. There was a media guy from Pune, which is a city 3.5 hours from Bombay where I stay. And he invited me for his birthday and he sent me, you know, his Mercedes to pick me up and, you know, treated me like a VIP at his birthday party. And it was really strange that everybody just turned hysterical. And I was wondering, like, is it just me? Like, did everybody just get drunk, you know, all of a sudden, instantly? So there was this French chef, and he says, you know, he told me the next day, because he was very artistic. And so we were talking about fine art and, you know, Picasso and Monet and Dali. And the next day, you know, on the phone, he said, Sheena, just so you know, like, they were doing cocaine. That's why they kept, you know, like, going in the bedroom and, you know, like, scratching their nose and all these weird things that happened, you know, at that party. And I was just shocked because I grew up in America and, you know, I mean, people would think that, you know, in America, you're exposed to all of these things. But it was when I came to India and I came to Bombay and, you know, kind of started mingling in the Bollywood scene that I was exposed to all this stuff. And it was very shocking because most of the actresses and the models who just, you know, all of a sudden they're nothing in one day, and the next day they become super popular and they have a blue tick on their, you know, social media accounts, like on Instagram or Twitter. I mean, I've met them at these parties and I know, like, they haven't done any kind of work and all of a sudden they become popular. And I've seen them pull out, you know, their handbags with all sorts of drugs. And I've had to literally leave parties, like house parties, even friends of mine, you know. There was this cinematographer who had done the cinematography for a music video that I produced myself, and he invited me to his house for a house party, and there was this model there and she pulled out all these drugs. And you know, it actually was a fashion designer. It was in the same building I was living in. There was a fashion designer and one cinematographer, and the three of us were friends. So they used to take turns, you know, in having people over, you know, from the industry. So they would always invite me. So, you know, I was invited and they called me and they said, no, we're cooking vegetarian food for you. And I was shocked. And I've honestly, I don't know what kind of drugs they all had, but it was stuff I've never seen before. And I got really scared. And, you know, I stopped going to these house parties since, you know, I started seeing all these things.
Yeah, so I appreciate you sharing that. I mean, I think that, like, it is interesting that you say you came across these things once you left America rather than in the United States. Obviously, these things happen around the world. And for those who are from an American audience, the idea of, you know, political people or even Hollywood actors and directors and such using their power to try to get young women such as yourself to sleep with them. Unfortunately, those things are probably more common than we realize. And then, of course, the drugs coming into that. And I guess now I would like you to switch, you know, continue to move forward in your journey, because it seems like from what I've gathered and from what you've shared with me and our mutual friends have shared with me, that things progressively got worse. It went from just, well, sleep with us and you'll get a good career and here's everybody using drugs, to more more direct forms of abuse and sexual activity. So let's talk about that a little bit.
So yeah, I mean, I was meeting with different directors and they were talking about, okay, if you, you know, we have this film and this is the actor, and we'll give you like a second lead role. And, but you know, you have to
come. Do you want to talk to your dog for a second? Do you need to take care of him? I can give you a second.
Yes.
Okay. I'll do that. All right, everybody, if you're listening to, this is Derek Brose with the Conscious Resistance Network. I hope you guys will stay tuned. I know some of you seem to be a little impatient listening to this. And I just want you to understand that Sheena is, as she just provided her background, her educational background, her work background, you know, she's coming from Canada to India, coming on the invitation of other well-known Indian media personalities, you know, winners of Dance India Dance. It's sort of like, you know, the dance competitions in America and everywhere else, and being invited into this world, into this Bollywood lifestyle, which, as she's describing, involves drugs. It involves, you know, women being asked to sleep with powerful men. And again, this isn't anything that we haven't heard of as far as Harvey Weinstein and some of these other folks happening in Hollywood, but now this is happening in Bollywood, India. And the reason I wanted to share this story, not only because we haven't even got to the most disturbing aspects of what she has witnessed and what is happening with her. I don't want to take away from what Sheena is going to share, but I just will let you guys know she has been exposing and been very vocal in her country and in India, and is now facing backlash and is having people push back and, you know, come after her. So we're going to hear from her now with her lovely pup in the picture.
He's a little Mexicano chihuahua.
I see him. All right, well, yeah, go ahead. Please continue.
So, you know, it's not just they ask you to, you know, have sex once. They ask you to have sex with the producer, the director, the actor, the actor's manager, the business partners. And basically, like, you're asked to be a whore. And, like, I'm sorry, but this is, you know, it seems very shocking considering that people think, oh, India is so spiritual and people come, you know, for yoga and meditation and all these gurus and everything. But the reality of Bollywood is something totally different. And, you know, films, not only are films made, depicting all these kinds of religious things, it's actually like a real mockery to the actual culture. Because if you go back in history and you see the gurus and the mystics, you know, who were very pure and very, you know, saintly, it's kind of mocking, you know, I feel like the Indian religion and the Indian culture. And it, for me, it's been really shocking. Films are mostly, like, believe it or not, they're financed by black money. Okay, so you'll have like big corporates, businessmen, who flush out their black money in films. And they convert it to white money. And a lot of money, like if it's a big celebrity, they might be tied to an NGO. Now, what happens is that if a Bollywood celebrity has an NGO, when they take their payment for their work, that money is put into the NGO, and it's their way of, you know, bypassing taxes or whatever. But aside from that, like when you go in, you know, and understand what is really the truth behind the NGOs, it's really shocking and disturbing, because it's not what you think it is. People come from all over the world and think, oh, you know, we want to do some kind of good charity work in a third world country, and they come to India, you know, and they have no idea the reality behind these NGOs. There's child trafficking, human trafficking, organ harvesting, all sorts of things, you know, and, you know, the current situation right now in India is that, you know, there was recently the death of a very good, talented Bollywood actor who, you know, was an engineering student, a third year dropout, you know, extremely intellectual, knowledgeable about all sorts of things. I mean, he was even in some articles, he was compared to Elon Musk for his work. So, I mean, this guy, Sushant Singh Rajput, had the potential of becoming, you know, a philanthropist with the kind of projects he was involved with. He trained at NASA, you know, which Bollywood celebrity has trained at NASA? He was into coding. He was into AI technology. He has a company with, you know, two partners, and, you know, they had patents on various AI and, you know, other very, 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 you know, like interesting and promising technologies, even the UPI technology, you know, which we use when we pay through like Google Pay or these payment apps like WePay or Paytm or whatever. So, I mean, he was extremely knowledgeable, you know, Sushant Singh Rajput. And there was a film that was released right after his mysterious disappearance, you know, because personally, I don't see proof that, you know, is he dead or is he alive? You know, people within 10 minutes of, you know, it coming into the mainstream media, it, you know, the authorities declared it as a suicide. But from my experience and because of my personal relationship, you know, I was dating an MMA fighter. And this is a fact. So, you know, I was dating a guy named Dhruv Chaudhary. And, you know, I thought he was just, you know, a simple fighter and a trainer. And, you know, I didn't know how much money has been invested behind him, because, you know, people were talking about nepotism as well. You know, Sushant was so brilliant, but he was, you know, not really welcomed by the rest of the Bollywood fraternity. And he was mocked and ridiculed and singled out. And, you know, he had a lot of failed relationships.
Can you tell us how they claim he killed himself?
So, I mean, they said that he committed suicide. But see, they showed, you know, basically, I'll tell you one thing. If you know the story about Isaac Kapi, okay, you know, he came out and he had revealed about the pedophilia and everything. Sushant was involved in supporting various NGOs, okay? And these NGOs have come under the radar for child trafficking and organ harvesting. And there was a lynching case that happened, you know, in a neighboring area, neighboring town called Palghar, P-A-L-G-H-A-R. So when the lockdown started, it started in India. It started on the Sunday, the third Sunday of March. Like, it was the 20th of March that we had a curfew. And during the curfew, they announced that we're on lockdown now. And in the first 3 months of the lockdown, you know, you can find news article. There were 27,000 children who were missing. They had gone missing. And then all of a sudden, you hear about some kind of, you know, these saints, which they call sadhus. They were lynched in Maharashtra, which is the state which Bombay is in. So, you know, just hours from Bombay, there are these saints or sadhus who were lynched. And, you know, it in the news, they showed it as some kind of religious tension. You know, it they always use, you know, religion between, you know, Hindus and Muslims, or Christians and Hindus, or whatever it may be. You know, they blame Catholics for converting people in India. So, you know, they target, you know, a religious group. But that was not really, you know, the reality of what actually was going on. More than 27,000 children went missing in Maharashtra. And there were people who were finding and were coming forward about, you know, these places where they have all these NGOs is where there were children being organ harvested. And not only that, you know, pedophilia is huge in Bollywood, just as it is in Hollywood. You know, it may come a shock to the public, but this is the truth. Like I said, I mean, the drugs, if you know about Key Club, where they, you know, they have these parties with socialites and even, you know, celebrities, and they swap each other's partners. So they would be, before it used to be taboo to be married. And in the recent years, all of a sudden, everybody just got married, like within the matter of a year, several Bollywood actors, you know, all just lined up, you know, and got married. So it's very interesting that, you know, this was done as sort of like, even, you know, a lot of times this happens as a PR stunt. And, you know, it was revealed to me that this happened with one cricket player. So he was on this coffee talk show, and by a very big producer in Bollywood. And he had made a fumble, and he said, you know, that I tell my parents when I come home that I just came from basically having sex, you know, and just, you know, screwing that, you know, a girl or some women or whatever. And, you know, if they would go to a party, he would say, you know, if his parents asked him, like, who is he in a relationship with, he would say, yeah, that one, this with that one, that with this one and whatnot. So in order to, like, you know, change the image in the public, the PR company used photos from, you know, Diwali, which is a sort of equivalent to, like, the, you know, our Christmas. So the Festival of Lights. So the photos were used from that and from another ceremony, like when a woman is pregnant, they do like a prayer kind of thing. And those photos were used to project to the public that this guy got married, just to save image and to save face, because, you know, you've exposed and you've revealed about Illuminati and, you know, the secret society. So this person changed their jersey number from whatever it was to the number 33. And after he changed it to 33, he, you know, his career took off in a positive way. So you can see, and you can see there's a pattern of these things happening, you know.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask just briefly, if we could step back just a moment, because I want to clarify for the audience. So before Shashant's go on missing, you know, alleged death, he was starting to speak out about these things, was he not? Or was starting to learn about them, right?
Right. So he was planning to do a press conference as per, you know, what has been, you know, revealed by people close to him, that he was planning on doing a press conference. And basically there was a girl from an NGO who was brought to one of these Bollywood parties, who was gang raped. And apparently the girl was had been saved by him, and he had her in his house, and he was planning to do, you know, a press conference, you know, because he had her as, you know, a living proof. And before that could happen, you know, on the 13th, there were some really mysterious things which happened. I'll actually tell you about this person here, which you have on the screen. Yeah, so this doctor comes out, you know, a few months into the investigation, claims that there was sperm found on his pajamas, meaning his undergarments, and there was a girl in his room. And yeah, and here you go. So this girl who's in the photograph here, that was his live-in girlfriend, Sushant Singh Rajput's live-in girlfriend. And the man she's hugging and embracing is very well known, you know, to be involved, like, you know, in a lot of black magic is done in Bollywood, believe it or not. A lot of black magic, a lot of cult activities. Even, you know, their production house is called Illuminati Films. And Illuminati Films, in conjunction with Disney, produced the last film called Dil Bechara. And I had done a decoding a three-part decoding on this film, Dil Bechara, which, you know, was produced by Illuminati Films. And you can see a lot of the satanic references, the Disney references, where they use a mirror. And, you know, he was wearing a t-shirt in the film which said help across it. And, you know, the dialogues, when I was decoding it, there were a lot of dialogues which were taken, you know, from his real life interviews, and they were used as, you know, to mock him. Yeah, so here you see on Wikipedia, you have Illuminati Films is an Indian production company, and co-directed, I mean, you know, the two directors of this film were, you know, connected, closely connected to a lot of films that Sushant Singh Rajput has acted in. So in fact, one of the directors, you know, in this company was, you know, dating Sushant. And the guy who was working for Sushant, you know, in fact, he's a corporate lawyer, and he works for a very, you know, the number, you know, basically they've been, they've recently just been recognized as one of the top law firms in India. So the managing director of the law firm is a, you know, a very experienced criminal lawyer. So I spoke to him because I started getting, you know, threats. My boyfriend's behavior became really strange. And, you know, I had to retain a law firm because, you know, people are harassing me, telling me to leave India, not to speak about the case, not to speak about things. A close source of mine.
Let me just pause you for just a moment. I'm sorry to cut you off again. We were just showing everybody on the screen, for those who are going to be listening just to the audio, everything that she's referencing, I'm showing on screen. I will include all this in the description so everybody can see that what she is describing is factual. So we've been discussing Bollywood actor Sushant Singh Rajput and his alleged suicide. And you mentioned that he was working on putting a press conference together to kind of talk about these things. And how did you, just, I guess to kind of clarify this, how did you get connected? Were you connected to him before he died, or did you get into this after he died? Or, you know, I know you were kind of getting to your boyfriend starting to act weird. So let's kind of, I guess, clarify some of that.
Yeah, so I never met Sushant Singh Rajput, but my boyfriend was living at my house and at my flat. And, you know, he has a very strict regime. Like, his alarm goes off at 6 a.m. He leaves the house at 6:30 a.m. I walk him to the door, and, you know, he, you know, kisses me before he goes to work, to the gym. And during the lockdown, he was at the gym every single day. You know, no other gym was open. And, you know, so he would anyway go to the gym every day to train, and then around 1 or 2 p.m. he would be at his flat, at his house, just a few minutes away, and he'd, you know, have his lunch there, and then he'd go back to the gym to train again. And he's also the personal trainer of Tiger Shroff, which, you know, everybody knows in the industry. You know, he's a very well guarded actor, who, you know, appears in a lot of these, you know, kung fu and action kind of films. So, you know, I didn't ever ask him about his work because, you know, I don't like to pry too much into his business. But from what he was telling me and revealing to me, you know, I came to know a lot of other things which were really shocking, and which also then ended up being really strange because, I mean, he left my house at 6:30 in the morning, and he called me at 9:30 saying Sushant has been murdered. And he called with a very frightening voice that he's been murdered. And a week before that, he told me that my friend Disha Salian was, you know, had died. So he didn't talk
this
much.
This was your
about
boyfriend that. Talking to you about this? Your boyfriend?
Yes, my boyfriend. So, you know, he told me Disha, his friend in Malad, which is another area in Bombay, she had died, but he didn't tell me anything in detail. And I don't watch television. I don't have cable. So, you know, I I don't pay attention to these things, and I don't read gossip columns or, you know, Page Three and stuff like that. I'm not into all of that. So I was just getting my information, like not getting my information. He was telling me things. So then a week later, you know, the news came out about Sushant. And before the news came out, now, the reason why I kept, you know, I came out and I started speaking publicly was because everybody who came, who was being interviewed by, you know, this news channel, Republic News Channel, which was, you know, all the channels, Times Now, and all these channels were doing interviews of, you know, people who worked with him and his ex-girlfriend and whatnot. So they were all giving their stories, but their version didn't match the, you know, what I knew. And I found it very strange. So, you know, then I started like going on online and, you know, watching the interviews and the sting operations by, you know, Republic News. And I was just thinking like, something is not right. And I feel like they're being misguided, because if my boyfriend called me at 9:30 in the morning and, you know, the locksmith said he, you know, received a call that somebody's locked in his room and can you please come and unlock the door at 1 p.m. in the afternoon, that doesn't make sense. And his house manager, you know, and different people who were working in his house were saying that, oh, you know, he had breakfast in the morning, he had his juice, orange juice, and he went for a walk or a jog. And then he went in his room and he locked himself in his room. How is that possible? Because my boyfriend called me at 9:30 in the morning and told me he was murdered. So it didn't make sense.
So, I mean, this would imply then that your boyfriend, as well as other people, had knowledge of this before the media knew and before most people knew, right? Which is one of the things, I think, among others, that has made you suspicious of this whole thing, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, okay, if he did commit suicide, why? How did my boyfriend know that he was dead at 9:30 when the people in his house were saying, no, he was alive and he was drinking his orange juice and he had gone for a walk or a jog. And then, you know, at 10:30 or something, you know, he was in his room and they were coordinating with different people who were speaking to him about different films and projects, upcoming projects that he was, you know, looking at and different scripts for upcoming projects. So it didn't, none of it made sense, you know. How is it possible that they called the locksmith at 1 p.m. when my boyfriend already told me at 9:30 in the morning that he was murdered? And when the news broke out, they said that it was suicide. Now, if you look at the photographs of, you know, which are on, you know, in the public domain, how is it possible that a person who commits suicide has a ring around his neck, which is like in like an O shape? Because if you hang yourself from a ceiling fan with a cloth, it would, you know, it would go around like a U shape, right? And when somebody commits suicide, their eyes pop out and their tongue sticks out. So in his photographs, while he's lying on a bed, you know, first of all, there's not a single photograph of him hanging. Nobody has a photograph of him hanging. And when people were giving their interviews and telling about what had happened, yeah, so this is the photograph. So I can show you, like, see, you see, one eye is open and one eye is sort of closed. The tongue is not out. The eyes are not bulging out. People also, you know, who were researching this said this is not even his bedroom. And it can't be his bedroom because his, like, interior of his living room, they had done, you know how they do, like, the inside of homes of celebrities. So there was no such kind of decor like this. He had like a very, you know, he was very much into stargazing. He had this very expensive telescope and he had all kinds of very, you know, interesting, like, you know, sort of artifacts. So it doesn't seem possible that this is even his bedroom. And you can see in the photograph, like, see the position of the body. And then later on, when his body is taken out on a stretcher to go in the ambulance, his body changes position again. So when a person dies and commits suicide, first of all, like I said, the common things that you see are the eyes popping out, the tongue sticks out, and they hang, like, you know, with their hands down, they hang. This guy is like out like this. And not only that, there are stun gun marks on his neck, okay, with a break in between. And they were, the first, you know, theory was the suicide theory, which they were trying to, you know, portray in the media, that it was a suicide, that it was a suicide. But, you know, if it was really, like, there were photographs that were given by the family, by the sister, to one news channel, Times Now. So, you know, in the photographs, you see that the red mark of the so-called, you know, I'll get to this point. This is a very important point. So the red mark goes across the neck and then it breaks and then it starts a little bit below and then it goes across. So there was a big circle around here. And then there were all these like marks of like some kind of, you know, injections or some kind of needles and pins or something that were inside his neck from the stun gun. So then later on, you know, when people started researching and they were like, no, people, you know, there were a few people who gave very informative and useful information about, you know, when they saw his body. You know, one guy said that, you know, when he went into the mortuary and he took the ex-girlfriend, like the live-in girlfriend, who supposedly had a breakup and left him a few days before this happened. In fact, Disha Salian knew Sushant Singh Rajput. She, you know, is a celebrity manager. And the company, the PR company or PR management company she was working for, you know, basically, like, the whole story that came out about her was that Sushant was very depressed because his ex-manager, Disha Salian, committed suicide. So they also portrayed, again, a suicide there. And they said she flew out of her building and she jumped out. Now, if she jumped out, she would fall down, right? We know the laws of gravity. But her body was found outside the compound on the road. And her body was found naked without any clothes. So again, you know, like I said, yes. So they portrayed that also.
So this is his ex-manager also coming up allegedly suicide. And is this after or before his death?
So this happened on the 8th. It actually happened on the 7th, 9th, and like over in the night. The news came out, I think, on the 8th, and then they changed it and said, no, she died on the 9th. And then they said that it took 2 days to do her COVID test. And then, you know, like, it's questionable whether there was a postmortem done. There are a lot of discrepancies with, like, the death certificate. You know, they said that she was naked and she had some, you know, vagina samples that were collected, right? But the case has been closed, and they, you know, the families get pressured, you know, by the Nexus and by authorities and whatever, you know, the pressure of, you know, the media and the industry to not, you know, talk about this in, you know, in the public. So then, you know, the family, you know, was pressured into kind of like saying, okay, we don't want, you know, this case to be sort of investigated, but the public, you know, it's we the people, right? Like the viewers and the audience that make an artist a celebrity and a star, because we watch their films, right? You watch, like, if I'm a dancer and a performer, and if I'm dancing well, you'll support me and you watch me now, and I will get more opportunities because of that, right? Same way, like if I'm in a film and, you know, if there are views and, you know, in the box office, if successful, then those celebrities get more endorsements and deals and they get all sorts of other film offers. So, you know, I think the public has the right to demand an investigation and answers to what really happened with her.
So just to clarify, did she... Do we have any information, or do you have any information whether or not she was aware of what Shoshan was talking about as far as, you know, the potential for all this stuff going on?
So sources have, you know, like, you know, throughout the investigation, and, you know, because Sushant knew all these things, Some people did try to come forward and say that, yes, she knew about it and she had contacted, you know, Sushant about the minor girl from the NGO who was brought to a party. And apparently, the one story which was given was that she attended a birthday party. And when she arrived at that birthday party, there were a group of celebrities and politicians or whatever, and she witnessed them gang raping that minor girl, and she apparently called Sushant. So this is one of the theories and that's come out. And then, you know, when more and more information started surfacing, you know, on the net, after that, you know, a lot of people disappeared. There have been, you know, at least more than 35, 40 deaths, all, you know, related to people who knew things, who knew Sushant Singh Rajput directly. They worked with him. They were co-actors, you know, and they worked with him in some capacity or another. There have been bankers that apparently who have died. There have been investigating officers. There are lawyers. There are a lot of really mysterious things, you know, all. And I think that his mystery, you know, sort of was a catalyst for an awakening about what is the reality behind the NGOs, the human trafficking. You know, it's an international thing. You think that where do the bodies go? Where do all these children go, right? And where are the organs being sold? So, you know, when this was going on, there was this guy, Vibor, there was a comment you just flashed here. So Vibor is from Delhi. And his father is, you know, a senior Supreme Court lawyer. And he decided that, you know, like there was something in this case that he wanted to know what the truth is. So I know him and I saw him. And basically, like when I started, you know, questioning, how is it possible that Sushant was still locked in his room at 1 p.m. when my boyfriend already told me he was murdered. And at 9:30 in the morning, there was no news about his death. So all of these things are all very questionable. And, you know, we see news agencies or news reporters and stuff, like they've covered the story and you see, you know, in some videos, you see two ambulances, some videos, you see three ambulances. Also, when he came out on the stretcher, there was like an arm that was visible of like a young body. And the stretcher, like his body was looking like 7 feet, you know, on the stretcher. And, you know, that doesn't match his height because he was not 7 feet. So like a lot of discrepancies, even like the time of death was not mentioned on his death certificate. So right now, like the family has filed 306, which is an Indian Penal Code section, which is abetment to suicide. And the public is demanding 302, which is murder. But when you look at the evidence, where is the evidence that can, you know, you have to justify why you want to add the section 302. You cannot just out of the blue say, you know, he was murdered without having substantial evidence. And all the evidence, you know, which is there has been, you know, it's been tampered with. So there was an article which you flashed here, you know, of this Subramaniam Swami or something. And, you know, it was interesting because earlier on during the investigation, he was saying it was a suicide. Then he turned around and said there was sperm found on Sushant's pajamas, which is like his boxers or his underwear, whatever he was wearing on his garments. Then, you know, so this is the, you know, so if it was a suicide as per the original theory, which came out, then later on when, you know, people started doing their research and revealing that no, it couldn't have been suicide because there were no signs of suicide. Like forensic experts, you know, I think there was somebody named Dr. Bhupesh who had done, had covered the whole thing. And there's another Dr. Padma, who's an Indian lady who's very vocal on the case in the UK. So she also explained that it cannot be suicide. And yeah, so this doctor, I believe he's a politician or something. And a recent interview in a platform, which I've been going on to tell them, like, look, I received a call at 9:30 a.m. that he was murdered. So why do people want to question all these other people, you know, and why are they giving attention to the fake juice theory and that he went for a run and all these things? Because I myself was informed at 9:30 in the morning.
Yeah. So I want to, first of all, thank you so much for sharing. Again, everybody who's just tuned in, we are listening to Sheena Lakhani, who is sharing all about her experience in India for the last like 7-8 years, maybe a little longer. And earlier you were describing things as, you know, like, if you want to get a job as an actress or as a model, or you want to move up in your career, well, then you need to sleep with me. Everybody experimenting with different drugs, cocaine, and maybe some other things. But then also
a lot getting more.
I'm sure there's more as well. Getting into, you know, the death of a well-known actor in India, as well as his director, and all of these kind of web of connection, which again, I think are familiar, even if the names and the situations and the locations aren't familiar to some of my audience. The tactics, the, you know, the sort of the same operating model, it's there. It's the same thing we've seen with Epstein that we've seen with so many other cases around the world. And I really hope people will understand that. I do want to talk a little bit about how this has affected you directly, because obviously you're being very vocal. Like you said earlier, you've gone on various Indian YouTube channels as well. And now we're trying to get it out to more of the American and European audience. And hopefully others will want to hear this as well, because this is one of those topics that for me, after spending several years diving down these rabbit holes, as I know you know, it's very dark. It's very difficult to, you know, you have to come up for air every now and then. And even then, whenever you stop to pause and like, I need to kind of get back to normal life, these things don't stop. They don't go away. And this is a situation that does not have a quick, easy fix, like, hey, call this politician or sign a petition or something. This is a global issue that we are dealing with. And
It's an extremely big nexus, and there's a lot of, you know, everybody has their own agenda and their own, there's a lot of politics surrounding this whole thing. It's, different authoritative bodies are being questioned. Why was this done and why was this not done? Why was it announced 10 minutes within his death that he committed suicide? Why is the family filed 306? Why didn't they file 302? I mean, people want justice, but then like when I said, okay, I don't know. Right. I don't see from the evidence, which is there in the public domain and based on all the interviews and all the discrepancies, where is the evidence that justifies that he's dead?
Yeah, I understand. I want to ask you this question that one of our listeners just asked, because I did mean to ask you this earlier. Was your, I don't know if he's still your current boyfriend or your former boyfriend, was he ever questioned as part of this, or did you ever get any more information out of him?
So when I started asking him questions, I noticed his behavior was extremely weird. Okay. And he was avoiding the questions. He was, then he turned around and said, no, it was a suicide. It was a suicide. And I said, you called me, you were like, you know, you had, you know, a lot of fear and, you know, he had anxiety in his voice when he called me. And he told me that Sushant was murdered. It was like almost as if he had seen a ghost. So when I asked him, then he came home one night. And he was very, you know, I'll tell you one thing, okay, in the industry, it may be very difficult to accept this, but the reality is that majority of models, male and female, get raped. And you know, he was, you know, he came home one night, and he came late and he was very angry, and he just came and we never had fight, you know, like, but his behavior became very aggressive and he started arguing and saying things. And he's like, you know, I said, why are you behaving like this? You know, all of a sudden he told me that he cannot be in a relationship with me anymore. He was saying, you know, I'm going to be fighting, in Dubai in December. There's a big fight and I'm going to get my title belt, this and that. And then I'm going to retire and then we can come public with our relationship. And I said, why do we have to hide? You know, like, that's not how I am. I'm very transparent and I don't have anything to hide because, like, I'm not doing anything wrong. So he's like, no, you know, I won't get promoted. We can't tell anybody. So he was secretly coming, you know, and staying. He was living in my house secretly. And then after Sushant's death, he actually came home one night and he raped me. And we went to bed. He came home and he said, look, because usually he comes home, he says, before he comes, he's like, Sheena, can you make the, you know, can you cook dinner? And he comes home and we watch like an episode of, we were watching Blind Spot together. And then, you know, we go to bed and by 10:30, 11 o'clock, we're in bed. And I, like I said, at 6 a.m., his alarm goes off. So we went to bed. He came late, very late. And we went to bed. And while we were sleeping, like I was half asleep, he grabbed me. And he said, I'm going to rape you. And he put me on my stomach and he pulled down my panties and he unnaturally raped me. And I was crying and screaming and I confronted him about it, you know, in our chats. After that, he avoided meeting me. He avoided coming to my house. He had some meeting, you know, with some politician and his bosses. And I saw him on the 19th of July. I remember it because it's my father's birthday that day. So I was, you know, searching for flats and I was in his building again, looking at flats and other buildings in the neighborhood. And he said, okay, come over once you're done. So I went over and my mom just happened to call me. And he was making herbal cinnamon tea for me. I'd given him a collection of teas, you know, like, because he said he was sick all of a sudden after that political meeting he had on the 10th of July. And he told me he had gone to the house of this politician in Worli. And it didn't, you know, like, nothing also made sense because, like, he told me that if it was anybody in front of him, he would have killed them for his career. But because it was me, he didn't. And he told me, he begged me to leave India. He said, just leave until this whole thing is over and come back, you know, like after a few months, just leave right now. And I was just like, you know, my family also cannot fathom what is going on. My close friends all know about it. They know everything. And the other thing which happened on the 14th was, which was really, really shocking for me. And I was trying to ask him about it, but he was so aggressive with me, was that, so he called me at 9:30 in the morning and then he disappeared for 5 hours. And so I live in Santa Cruz and he lives in Kar, and then his boss lives in Bandra and the gym is in Bandra Reclamation. So he posts a video on his Instagram story at around 1:20 p.m. Okay. And remember, like I said, just remember the timeline. He left my house at 6:30 a.m. He called me at 9:30 a.m. frightened, saying that his friend died. And I said, who? I asked him who. And he said, Sushant. And I said, who is Sushant? He said, he's an actor. I was like, okay, what happened? And then he hung up the phone abruptly. I messaged him, what's going on? He disappears for 5 hours. And then at 1:20 p.m., he posts a video on the C-Link. So after Bandra Reclamation, there's a bridge called the C-Link that goes to Worli. And he was in the car with his bosses, right? And I have those messages. You know, he wrote to me that he's, you know, with Tiger, Disha, Krishna, and Mata. Mata is Aisha Shroff, who is Tiger Shroff's mother. And Disha Patani is not Disha Salian, the ex-manager. Disha Patani is an actress who made her debut in Bollywood with Sushant Singh Rajput in a film called M.S. Dhoni, D-H-O-N-I. It was, a biopic film on a cricket player. So, I mean, none of this made sense. And, you know, he tells me that, you know, and then he sends me a selfie from the gym, you know. He's like, we just went to go see. I was like, why would you be there? And in the video clip that he posted on his Instagram, they were laughing. And I couldn't, when I realized, like, first of all, I don't know who Disha Patani is. But then when people were, you know, doing sting operations and interviewing people on news channels, you know, there were different people that were being interviewed. And out of all the people who were interviewed, there was one person who was at the mortuary who was not interviewed, but he was an associate producer for the film MS Dhoni. And his name is Suraj Singh. You can find it on, you know, IMDb. This is all, you know, public information. It's, you know, these are actual hard facts. So I, you know, during the lockdown, I didn't have my Wi-Fi set up at home or anything. And I was, you know, in touch with people through phone, basically. So I had spoken to a co-actor of mine named Mohit Baghel, B-A-G-H-E-L, M-O-H-I-T, Mohit Baghel. So we worked in a film called Kash Hai To Aise. You can see my IMDb and you can see it's there listed. So Mohit was my fiance, you know, in the film, and it was a comedy Bollywood film. And during the lockdown, we spoke over the phone and we had plans. Like, he was planning to come over to my house. We discussed different things because a lot of, you know, celebrities and stuff started going on TikTok. You know, TikTok was becoming very big. So we had discussed, you know, that he was going to come over and we were going to work on TikTok. And I said, listen, I'm trying to get my internet thing sorted. While I was dating my boyfriend, like, he was living at me. He knows I didn't have, you know, Wi-Fi set up. And it was very difficult for me to do TikTok because it uses a lot of data and you need access to proper internet. So, and before the lockdown, I was traveling because I had a family wedding to attend for a cousin of mine from Uganda. And I was also shooting for a web series, episodic show. So, you know, so then I didn't have the internet set up and I had just moved into this flat in mid-January and I still had things in boxes. So my boyfriend, you know, sometimes would come home and he would help me, you know, unpack things and everything. He was very caring. And, you know, there was a dog, okay, a puppy in my society, like in my building, that was sick. And I called him and I said, I don't know what to do. He said, let's, you know, take the dog to a vet. And I paid all the bills. And later on, you know, basically to shut me up and silence me and to suppress my voice from coming out and speaking openly, his bosses, Jackie Shroff, who is a very well-known actor in Bollywood, so he's Tiger Shroff's father, his lawyer, Sham Devani, files a really ridiculous lawsuit against me for defamation. And I'm like, you know, and in that they said, you know, that I had a spy camera and I recorded on the spy camera our intimate scenes and that I'm extorting money from him. I never took a single penny or in India, a rupee. I never took a single
penny. Was this rupee after you started to speak out?
This, yeah. So what happened is I contacted Republic News. I contacted them twice and there was a lady who recorded my statement. And I never heard back from them. And a few days later, I got a lawsuit. And the lawsuit, you know, they were saying that I'm first of all, they said that I'm 42 years old or 40 years old or something like that. And that I'm preying on young guys because he's a few years younger than me. First of all, I was born on 26 November 1985. I'm 35 years old. Even I'm being trolled in the last 72 hours, I'm being trolled by people who have their YouTube channels, who I have interacted with, and I have gone to them to share them information about facts, you know, about what I know. And now they're attacking me and saying that I'm PR. They don't even have proof. They said recently they just showed a bunch of my modeling photographs and said that I'm a 40-year-old woman from Dubai and that I'm paid PR. First of all, I was born in Canada. Second of all, I was born in 1985. So I'm not 40 years old. I'm 35 years old.
Let's talk about that a little bit more. I know you're getting into this now, but I want to start because I'm sure, I don't know if you've seen the comments, but we have more than a few people who are worried about your safety and who are concerned, as I'm sure that you are aware and all of us are, that, you know, you mentioned Isaac Cappy, obviously Shashant, like people who have spoken up about this. Definitely some of the work I've come across, there are people who have tried to speak out about these things that we're speaking here. And unfortunately, their lives are taken. And that it doesn't always end up being that way, though. Sometimes it's attacks in the media, especially for somebody as yourself, like you shared with us in the beginning. You are somebody who is well known already. You have had an acting career and been involved in a number of different, both in the business world as well as, like you're saying, in Bollywood and in the arts and everything. So, and you are not just somebody off the street talking about these things. So when you speak about this, it seems that people listen, and along with that, you get attacked. So I'm going to show just on screen a few of the articles that you sent me, and you can go ahead and share with us, you know, what has been the pushback? I know that at one point you mentioned that, you know, there's rumors being spread, but have you had pushback from the police? Have you faced, you know, any threats? Like, how is that situation going for you?
So in 2018, actually, so people ask, you know, a lot of people are asking, why am I exposing Bollywood when I work in the industry myself? Okay. I didn't know about the kind of drugs. I didn't know about the trafficking. I didn't know about the prostitution. But when when I started seeing all these things, I took a step back from acting and I started doing, you know, jewelry designing and photography and doing photo shoots. In 2018, I was also one of the Maxim international model winners. I was ranked, I think, was it 13th internationally or 10th internationally. And this 2020, I was also, I've been modeling, I've been doing different things. I've been doing jewelry designing. In 2018, I was designing sports bags for the official manufacturer. There's only one factory in all of India that is officially licensed to produce, to manufacture sports bags for Puma and Adidas. So I was, I was doing some work for them, like on a, like sort of independent consulting kind of basis. Somebody had noticed me while I was dancing bachata at a place that I go to at these, they have these Latin nights that happen, you know, in a lot of cities in India. So on Tuesday night, there's a place called Rasta, like, you know, Rastafarian kind of thing. It's called Rasta, Bombay. So I go there every Tuesday night because, you know, I'm a bachata dancer. And I was also the, you know, ambassador for US and Canada for a Afro-Latin sensation dance festival that happened, you know, in 2019 in Bombay. So, I have my regular places where I go dancing. People who know Oscar Naranjo, who's an Ecuadorian living in Toronto, he's really well known in the salsa and bachata scene internationally. So, you know, people know me through him because, you know, we had a relationship in the past as well. And, we've also danced and, you know, attended and danced for the government of Dominican Republic, you know, at an event in Toronto. So, you know, people notice me, I kind of stick out because my style of dancing is different. And then I get approached and some guy approached me at Rasta and told me, oh, you know, what do you do? And I said, well, you know, I'm an artist, but I'm also like a consultant. And, you know, I did computer science, you know, for 4 years in high school. And, you know, I actually had gotten a full scholarship at, I think it was Emory Riddle or something, for aeronautical engineering in the U.S. But my father was like, no, we're in North Carolina. You have the best universities here. So, I have a lot of a lot of expertise, like a lot of different talents in various fields. So I took a step back from the Bollywood because it was just really overwhelming. I was feeling a lot of pressure and I didn't want to get involved with all these things. And I don't go for auditions, you know, if somebody calls me directly, you know, most of my work, like actually all of my work in Bollywood has been, I've received a direct call. Most of the auditions which happen in Bollywood are just casting couch. So if you know what casting couch is, Derek, like, you know, basically they take all these auditions and these people who come for auditions, then they're sort of like, they get pimped for like a small role or a side role or for some kind of, you know, little break or whatever. But I stopped going to auditions after, like I said, in 2014, after like the first 6 months, I completely stopped going for auditions. I went for a total of 2 weeks, you know, worth of auditions. And then I started producing my own stuff. I produced a music video, which was a Bollywood Farsi, a Persian music, you know, crossover sort of project that I produced myself with my ex-husband, who was a model as well. And like, you know, I learned a lot of these things. You know, I learned about what happens in the modeling agencies as well, because my ex-husband, you know, he was modeling for all these online shops, like you have Flipkart and Amazon. So they have, like, in India, they have Flipkart, Myntra, these different ones. So, you know, he also was sick of this, you know, he was pressured a lot. And I had signed, you know, for a very big film as a dancer in one of the songs in this film called Kapoor and Sons. And I had gone for all the dance rehearsals and dress rehearsals. And they said, okay, you know, you're doing this song called, it was called Ladki Karke Chhod. And I went for all the rehearsals. And then they said, okay, well, you know, the story is you come to house party, you kiss your boyfriend, and then the dance starts. And then you have the two actors, Alia Bhatt and Siddharth Malhotra. And I was like, well, like my fiance, you know, who was my fiance at the time, he didn't feel comfortable with this whole thing because he knew a lot of things, which he was still, you know, revealing to me. And he was living with me at the time in 2015, 14. And so basically, like, what happened was I left the film. I didn't go for the shoot. I signed an agreement for the music video, for that dance video. And I brought him in, you know, to be like an extra in the scene so that I would kiss him, because, you know, he was really uncomfortable with the production house, you know, that was producing this film, Kapoor and Sons. And basically then I had gone for 3 days to Gujarat, which is another state. I was shooting in a city called Surat for a billboard shoot for a garment company that has like leggings. So I went there for a couple of days. And while I was there, they, you know, I had gone to the production house itself called Dharma Productions. And then they said, okay, we'll send your, you know, fiance, because I showed them a photograph. So they're like, okay, we'll take him in. So when he went, he told me that they explained to him it was a lovemaking scene. And by the time I came back, he was like, Sheena, I'm not doing it. You do it. You sign an agreement. You do it. Finish the work. It'll be a good thing for you that you worked in, you know, a big production, this and that. You know, this is something that's really difficult to get. And I said, no, like, if this is what happened to you, I'm not going to continue with it. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to support this kind of thing. So I didn't go. I just didn't go. And when I signed the agreement, they told me, oh, you know what? We've removed you from the kissing part. Your fiance will be doing that part and we'll be giving him your pay and we're deducting your pay because you're not going to be doing the kissing portion of it. You'll just be doing the dancing part. So I just left it, you know, but these modeling agencies, they get foreign models. Like my ex-husband is an Iranian and they get, you know, foreign models. They sign them with their agency. And they send these models to parties. They put them up in these fancy, you know, apartments and stuff. And then they send them to all these lavish parties. And, you know, they don't even know that for each model that attends a party, the modeling agency receives a payment from whoever is the host of the party, whether it's, you know, like a socialite or a company or a businessman or whatever it may be. So they don't know, like the models don't know that they're just by their presence that the modeling agency is earning money. And the kind of contracts they have is that, like, basically there are a lot of like foreign models that come from Brazil and, you know, from Russia, all different places from all over the world. And their contracts don't allow them to do any work outside of what the modeling agency gives them. So the agency only gives them enough work so that they can earn money to pay for their basic necessities, like their food and little things. But their housing is provided, and usually they have like, assistants that, you know, pick up the models and take them to their shoots or to their fittings or to their shows or whatever. So they kind of live this really pretentious lifestyle, like a very, it seems that it's glamorous, but it's not. And at these parties, I'm telling you, Derek, I myself, because I'm a Reiki healer, people, like models, have come to me crying, saying to help them, and they've gone missing afterwards, and they've told me that they've been drugged and raped multiple times. So rape.
I want to add to that real quick, if I can, just for those who are tuning in, that this is not something that's uncommon in all around the world. I actually posted recently on our BitChute channel this report from 1988 from the American 60 Minutes. It's called American Girls in Paris, and it covers this very specific topic about how models brought in and the same conditions you just described, you know, sort of promised all kinds of things, and then in some cases being set up to be sex slaves, and others maybe less, less blunt about it. But this is not an unheard of thing. And we've reported on this recently, what I've started to call the fashion to sex abuse pipeline, you know, the from the modeling world to the fashion shows. It's very much a way that these folks try to lure in young women and young men as well. We have about 5 or 10 minutes left here for today. I do want to have you back on another day that we can set this up so we can continue this conversation. But I would like for you, just for this last few minutes, to really just hone in on any other fine points that you want the audience to know as far as how they might be able to support you. And again, if there's anything that we can do to make you are safe.
So, I mean, I think, you know, coming forward and speaking about these things, with a full story is really important, because, like I said, like, this is real, this is reality, and there's so much evidence already in the public domain. I'm being attacked that, oh, you know, you're saying he was murdered. I said, you know, but I was informed that he was murdered. Do I believe he was murdered? I don't know. To be really honest, he could be alive, because, I mean, there is no evidence that shows that, you know, he committed suicide, first of all. And secondly, you know, they say that there is a post-mortem done. But if there was a post-mortem done, then when we saw the photographs of his supposed funeral, a post-mortem requires that they cut open the body, okay? And people said, oh, there was a viscera report. But then, you know, this person, you know, one person came on a show that I recently was on, and he said, no, there was not a post-mortem done on Sushant Singh Rajput. So if there wasn't a post-mortem done, then how could there have been a viscera report? A viscera report is done after a post-mortem. They cut up the body, they open it up, and when they do the viscera, they take samples from the organs. So how is it possible? And they say that his post-mortem was done like late in the night. First of all, that's against protocol. That's against legal medical protocol. It has to be done in the daytime, and it has to be video recorded. There's no recording of his post-mortem. So there are a lot of questions, a lot of mysterious things, but I'm based on the facts. There's no evidence that first of all, he committed suicide, which was the first theory. There's no evidence that can substantiate the family to file 302, which is murder. And until now, 302 has not been filed. The Ames report, which is the medical governing body, like which is in New Delhi, their report, which, you know, there was a comment flashed here before about Vibhor. So I had received some information and I passed it along, and it was confirmed that the Ames report was being manipulated by that Subramaniam Swami, right? So the Ames report, which came out, said it was a suicide. So imagine the organizational body, which is supposed to be reputed and is there in the country, if they've given a report stating that he's committed suicide when all the evidence shows that there's no suicide, because the strangulation marks were not from a green cloth. It was a red strangulation mark, and it was in a O shape, not a U shape. And they said he was hanging from a fan. There are no photographs of him hanging from a fan. And the family themselves, like their lawyer, said that they had spoken to an Ames doctor and they confirmed 200% that it was a murder. But the Ames report, then there was this whole big, debacle in the country about, why did the doctor do a U-turn and then issue a report saying that it was a suicide? Until date, it's that Ames report says it was a suicide. The death certificate is missing the time of death. So there's no document. And, the death certificate, which was prepared by Cooper Hospital, okay, which I was also sent to do, for my case, because like I said, you cannot just file an FIR. An FIR is a first information report. You cannot just file an FIR without having substantial evidence. I handed over, my lawyers put together my entire chat history, photographs, videos, everything, and handed it over to the police for them to register my complaint of rape. Until today, like, he's not been arrested. The same hospital which they sent me to do samples, that hospital, the forensic head of forensic department told me when I reached there that they're not going to do any kind of sampling for me. And this is the same hospital which they took Sushant Singh Rajput to. And when the body was taken out on a stretcher to go from the ambulance into the hospital, right, you don't see his body because people are standing in their joining arms to cover the cameras of the press. So there's no, like, there's no evidence also that the body reached Cooper Hospital. And the other thing is that, he lives in Bandra, and Cooper Hospital is next to my house. It's a distance of not more than 10 minutes. And we had just come out of the lockdown. There were hardly any cars on the road. So that drive would have been less than 10 minutes, not more than 10 minutes. But the ambulances took, more than an hour and a half to reach Cooper Hospital.
So it's very possible that something happened in that time period, right? Obviously, like, there's plenty of opportunity here for foul play is basically what you're outlining here.
Well, he wasn't taken to the nearby hospital, which is a very reputed hospital, Leelavati Hospital. He lives in a building called Mont Blanc, right? Like the pen company. So if you see it on Google, you can see, Mont Blanc, it's in Bandra, and the hospital, which is in Bandra Reclamation, which is next to the gym where my boyfriend works, right? The hospital, Leelavati Hospital, is in Bandra Reclamation, which is just less than a 5-minute drive. Why did they take him to Cooper Hospital, which is in next to my house? I live in an area called Santa Cruz. So they passed other hospitals on the way. They didn't go to Leelavati Hospital. It's a reputed hospital, right? Why would they only have to go to Cooper Hospital? And all the mysterious suicides, right, or deaths in Bollywood history, like Divya Bharti, their bodies are always taken to Cooper Hospital. There are a lot of mysterious deaths right now, and even there's one open, you know, pending investigation and case going on for Jia Khan, right? Her mother is in the UK fighting, and she still has not gotten justice, and it's been 7 years. And there are all the people that are surrounding who are questionable in her case are involved, and questionable people in Sushant's case. So there is a pattern here. And, you know, there's, you can't say concretely that he's dead. You cannot definitely say that he, for sure, he was not, it was not suicide. I mean, there was also a video of when he was lying down in that on the bed. There is some video that was leaked, and everybody has seen those videos, and his fingers were moving, and people were saying, no, he's not dead. The person who was standing there put the white sheet and covered his body because it started moving. So that is also questionable. Like, was he, maybe, could it be possible he was drugged and he was strangulated? And, you know, and another thing to talk about, just, it's very important here. Recently, there's one other lady like me who is openly, you know, fighting for Sridevi, who is another Bollywood actress. I've met her before as well. She died in Dubai. Her investigation shows that Sridevi was attending a wedding, and she was poisoned, and she was supposed to fall down while dancing at the wedding. But she didn't fall down while she was dancing, and actually, she was strangulated by a scarf by a fashion designer, Manish Malhotra, she said, and her husband, Boni Kapoor, was in the room, and he left and went to Lucknow. Back, he came back from Dubai, flew to India for a meeting, okay, and then the news broke out that she drowned in a bathtub, just like Michael Jackson. Okay, so understand. Do you remember the story about Michael Jackson? Right, there are a lot of, like, Whitney Houston also, another bathtub. So could it be possible that this was another Illuminati kind of sacrificial portrayal of death or suicide? Could it be possible these people are living underground? We know, you know, like, if you know, in the US, you know, Tupac Shakur, there was, you know, some stories about him cropping up that, you know, he was seen afterwards in, I think it was Jamaica or somewhere. I remember it kind of vaguely because I was, you know, in high school or middle school at that time. But, you know, these are things to think about. And
it's not an uncommon thing. I mean, we have, I think, without even having to get into the deep end of the rabbit hole there, I'm sure my audience are familiar with a number. There's just deaths of journalists, deaths of actors and actresses and various people, and often people who, as it seems in this case with Shoshan, that they, people who are trying to speak out maybe about some of the things that they have experienced, you know, in Hollywood, and I'm sure the same things in Bollywood. There are more and more people who are former child actors who are coming out to speak out. You know, there are people who are trying to speak out about the culture of pedophilia, the culture of treating women this way. I would like for us to do another interview, and perhaps we can create maybe a visual mind map of this kind of, that we could share to show, because I do know that with so much going on, I want everybody to watch this interview a couple times, because there's a lot of information in here, and it's going to be difficult to kind of take it in one sitting and really, I think, get a deeper understanding. But I've done my best to try to show some of the articles as you're speaking about them. And I know that you have spoken about this many times now. And I do want to say that, just so it's public knowledge, that you have shared with me, as well as other people, lots of files related to all this information. So that information is not exclusively kept with you. You are going to continue to speak out about this, but I do have a mountain of files related to this, and you sharing everything that you have witnessed and everything that you've been a part of. So for whatever reason, if that's ever necessary, I do have that information, and it will be shared and made public as well. We're going to have to leave it there for today, though, but would you like to say anything, closing thoughts or anywhere, anything that you want the audience to know before we wrap up?
I said it on my last interview, that the truth will set you free. The truth, if you stand for the truth, you know, you are protected. That's your security. That's your protection. Because, you know, money, fame, power, politicians, like, that's just an illusion. You know, for me, I'm thankful to God, to Christ, to Shiva, to Krishna, to Allah, to Buddha, to, you know, I respect all the religions, and I'm a mystic. So for me, it's, you know, I'm beyond religion. I'm connected to the source, and I have faith that the truth will protect me, and there's nothing that will stop me, you know, from continuing to speak. And like, yes, Derek, I want to confirm that, you know, I've already given a lot of files, chats, photographs, recordings, everything. I've spread it out across different countries around the world, because, you know, there were a few attempts made to, you know, like, there was a car that came out and hit me, and I had a police officer in my car. There, you know, we can talk about next time about, you know, how I was framed, and, you know, the other people from the industry, from Bollywood industry, who were with me. They were not arrested, but I was arrested, and I was, you know, totally bashed by the media. And, you know, the one thing I will say, another thing is very important. Mainstream media can make a person a hero. It can make a person a criminal. It can make an honest person look like a criminal. It can make a dead person look alive, and it can make a live person look dead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They can create reality, and that is what they're doing, and they will continue to do that until we expose them. Sheena, I want to make sure that we do set up another date to continue this conversation, because I do want to make sure that my audience, who is being introduced to this story today, can get some more of the details. And obviously, for me, I know that the goal as a journalist and just as somebody, a human being who cares about these things, I don't want to only talk about them. I don't want to simply sit here and just, you know, we could talk for hours about this, but I want us to do whatever we can to try to expose this, to make this story bigger than India. Because what I believe is that as these stories become international and as people recognize it's happening in the UK, it's happening under, you know, the crown, it's happening under the presidency in the United States, it's happening under, you know, it's, people will see that this is not simply, you know, random occurrences. These are not flukes. These are regular occurrences. These are things that are par for the course, that the people in power in these positions, they get there by being compromised, as you were discussing earlier, and by participating in these things. So I really do appreciate everything that you are doing today, and appreciate you taking the time to speak to us. I know it's late for you over there, so I hope you get some rest and that we can catch up very soon. Okay. And everybody, thank you for tuning in today. And again, please go back and watch this hour and 40-minute interview again, and just try to soak in this information, share it with anybody that you know who is in India. I do know that we had a few people listening from India, and I appreciate that. Share this information far and wide to anybody who you think will listen. Let's continue to expose these people. Let's continue to expose the truth about what's going on, because that is the only way that the people such as yourself, Sheena, who have suffered and who have, you know, been raped, been abused, that is the only way we're ever going to get justice. And so for me, I don't want us to get stuck on the salacious details of, well, this famous person or this, you know, this royalty, yes, they're involved. But what really matters is that we expose these things so that the people, the children, the young men and women, and the adults who have been abused can finally have justice. I think that's what really matters to me. So thank you guys for listening. Until next time, remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Peace.
This is Derek Bros. This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance. I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries: Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much. So many loved ones gone.
Don't you fucking tease that horse!
You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. We've all stayed alive. You have no idea.